beginning 30 days, beginning after the 30th day. Generally, people don't do that. So generally, we can assume that the father didn't do the pidyon haben unless we have proof to the contrary. Well, there may be that. Yeah. Okay. La'acha shloshim yom, vice versa. Yeah.
They didn't expect the guy really to die.
Well, that's the point. Yeah. Okay. La'acha shloshim yom, if the father dies after the kid is 30 days old or older, b'cheskas shenikdeh, then it's the other way around. Then we have a chazaka that the pidyon haben was done.
It really has to be done on 30th day.
So we talked about yesterday that it's supposed to be done as early as possible. And generally, you have a concept called Zrizin Makdim in the mitzvahs, that you're supposed to do a mitzvah at the earliest possible opportunity. We actually had a machlokas between the Chachamim, who said that it's supposed to be done beginning on the 31st day, and Rabbi Akiva, who is not sure whether the 30th day is a valid time to do it or not. There are some of the poskim achronim talk about, the Bach talks about this, for example, others talk about the possibility that maybe given that the expression in the pasuk is a pedurya of miben chodesh tifteh, from a month old and onward, you should be poy to him. They say maybe a chodesh for that purpose can be considered 29 days, 12 months, 12 hours, 793 halakim, so that once the kid is that age, even if it's on the 30th day, maybe you should do the pidyon haben.
One second, why is that? There's more than months of 30 days and 29 days.
There are about an equal number of months of 29 and 30 days in a year. We're going to be learning about that. Generally speaking, I mean, overall, in the long run, there's a little bit more Malayim than Chaserim. We're talking Jewish months. Because the average is 29 and a half days plus 793 halakim, there is a slight excess over the long term of Chadashim Malayim. We're actually going to learn about that in a few weeks in Erechim Bez Hashem. But anyway, the bottom line is, given that definition of a Chodesh, in that sense, is 29, 12, 793, 44 minutes and 3 seconds, whatever, then there's an argument that some of the posts can make that once the kid reaches that age, you can already do the pidyon haben. Okay, anyway, the point is that the post just says chodesh. The post just says chodesh. So, yeah. Okay, la'achar shloshim yom, if the father dies after 30 days, we assume he did the pidyon haben as soon as possible. Therefore, b'cheskas shenifteh, therefore just the opposite. We have a chazaka then that the kid was already redeemed. Ad sheyom relo shelo nifteh, unless he is told that a pidyon haben was not done. Meaning, Rashi says, sheyom relo would mean they tell the son that your father said before he passed away that I didn't do a pidyon haben for my son. Now you don't need complete eidus for it, Rashi says, because after all, it's not such a strong chazaka that he had a pidyon haben. Because it is true people pay off their debts, but not necessarily right away. So it's not such a strong chazaka that it needs to be counteracted with real eidus. On the other hand, Rashi says we can't say over here that Shayavi Raya, we can't say the Kohen should be obligated to bring, we can't say that the Kohen should be obligated to bring a proof that no pidyon haben was done and therefore pay me, because the son can tell him, after all, there's many Kohenim in the world who says my father did the pidyon haben necessarily with you. With that said, there are different girsois over here that have it similar to before, ad sheyavi raya, not ad sheyom relo shelo nifteh, not until they tell him that no pidyon was done, but rather ad sheyavi raya, unless a raya is there. Okay, fine. Another case, the Mishnah says, who lifteis with no lifteis? What if you have a father who has a pidyon haben has to be done because his own father didn't do it for him, or whatever the situation is, or no lifteis, and now he has a son, a firstborn, who also needs a pidyon haben? Which one takes precedence? Who kodim livnoi? His pidyon haben comes first, meaning, let's say, in other words, he only has enough money for one of them. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'noi kodmo. Rabbi Yehuda says the pidyon haben for his son takes precedence. Shemitzvosai al aviv, because fundamentally Rabbi Yehuda says the mitzvah for this father should have been on his father, but now his father's dead. Okay, so it devolves on him, but still the original chiyuv was on his father. Umitzvas b'noi olav, whereas the mitzvah for his son is to begin with on him. So therefore that will take precedence. The mitzvah of the son is on his father. Okay. Yeah. Okay. In other words, you have over here, Avraham had a firstborn Yitzchak. Yitzchak had a firstborn Yaakov. Avraham, for whatever reason, didn't do a pidyon haben for Yitzchak. So now Yitzchak, when he's older, he himself has a bechor, and then he remembers, hey, I never had a pidyon haben myself. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying, look, Yitzchak's obligation for Pidyon HaBen fundamentally should have been on Avraham. Avraham's dead, so he can't do it, therefore it devolves on Yitzchak. Whereas Yaakov's chiyuv to begin with is on Yitzchak. Therefore Yitzchak should be doing it first.
So one second, can you do a Pidyon HaBen when you have not been done a Pidyon HaBen yourself?
Yes. Well, no, what does one have to do with the other? You're giving the money to the Kohen. So the question is, which one takes precedence? As we're going to see in the Gemara, let's say you don't have enough money for both. So yeah. Okay. Well, okay, if it's just that, then you could just do them one right after the other, then it's not really that big a deal. Enos and mitzvahs, chavilas, so fine, you'll do each one separately. Of course you can borrow money, but you can do whatever you want. Point is that if you don't have enough, when, no, yeah, okay. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Itmar. Hapodes b'nei b'sech shloshim yom. If a person does pidyon haben for his son within the first 30 days, so we said pidyon haben is really only supposed to be done when the kid is 30 or more days old. Again, the Tanakama versus Rabbi Akiva, whether it's specifically after the 30th day or whether it could be on the 30th day itself. Whatever. In this case, he gave the money to the Kohen within the 30 days. Rav Amar Bnoi Padri or Shmuel Amar Ein Bnoi Padri. Rav says, okay, it's okay. The pidyon haben still takes effect and the pidyon has been accomplished. And Shmuel says that not. So let's figure out the details of the machlokas. De kulei alma, everybody would agree. De kulei, Hagoyes Habach adds, and Shitim Ukobetzes adds, Amar Rabba or Amar Rava, that de kulei alma, both Rav and Shmuel would agree, that if he said mei achshav, if when he gave the money to the Kohen, he said, I want the pidyon haben to take effect as of now, ein v'noi padri, then for sure, the pidyon haben does not take effect, then we just have to consider it that he gave the money to the Kohen as a present, because it can't be shayach during the 30 days.
Can't you say Rubik Kikulai?
What does Rubik Kikulai have to do with that? No. Because, you know, when the Torah mentions that it has to be mi ben chodesh, from a month old and onward, so therefore not before that. We discussed yesterday, Rashi says that the reason is because, well, those of us who were on the phone discussed yesterday that those of us who actually knew to read our WhatsApp messages and discover that there is a shiur being given over the phone discussed yesterday that Rashi holds the reason is because in general we say if a baby dies, Rahman al-Islam, during the first 30 days, they may have been non-viable to begin with. He may have been a premature baby or whatever, so therefore that's why you can't do pidyon haben during the first 30 days. Tosfos disagrees with that concept. Tosfos says, never mind that. Even let's say you know for a fact the kid was full term. Still, there's a cost of that it's only after 30 days. Anyway, so if you said me'achshav, for sure it doesn't work. La'acha shloshin yom v'isnu l'mois. If when you gave the money to the Kohen, you said, I'm giving you the money now, if effectively I'm depositing it with you, and I want the pidyon haben to take effect only after the 30 days, v'isnu l'mois, and at the end of the 30 days, the money still exists, the Kohen still has the cash on hand, v'adai b'nei padri, then there's no question the son is padri, because then it's fine. It's the same as any other thing where you can say, I'm doing this now and it should only take effect after a certain amount of time. So those cases you don't have the option. That's the question. The argument of Rav and Shmuel specifically would be, if he told him, to begin with, I'm giving you this money, but I want the pidyon to take effect only after 30 days. But meanwhile, the money was used up. So now we don't have the money available. So now the question becomes, is the pidyon valid? And by the way, you have a Kohanim talk about, would there be a similar concept also if the Kohen returns the money to the father within the 30 days? Would we say the same thing? That's also considered like Nisakhu Amos. Okay. Anyway, Rav Amar Bnoi Padri, Rav says that the child is Padri, needed to have a Kedusha Isha, because Rav says it's similar to a case of Kedusha. We know Kiddushin, you have to have Kiddusha Kesef, that is you have to give an object of value, an object worth at least a prutah to the woman, and then say Hareat Mekudeshesli. But you could have a similar kind of thing where you give Kiddushin saying that I'm giving you the money now and the Kiddushin should only take effect after X amount of time. And Hosam, and in that case, Lab, isn't it true that Afagabdinis Akhu Amoy, even if the money was used up, even if by the end of the 30 days the money no longer exists, have a kiddushin. Nevertheless, it still is a valid kiddushin. It still is a valid kiddushin because at the time when he gave her the money, it was there. She had the hana at the time. So fine. Hachanami
Loi. She could make a Kinyan whenever she wants.
That's, no, in other words, the point, no, she's Machna herself to him. That's the idea how Kedushin works. Is he gets, right, that's the point, in other words. So therefore, so that's the point. So that even if the money isn't there anymore, Hachanami Loi Shana. So therefore, Rav argues, here it's no different. Therefore, the same principle. He gives the money to the Kohen now. He says, I want the pidyon to take effect only after 30 days. The money's not there anymore. Okay, very well. So why is it different than Kedushin? Same way as he gave her the money. It doesn't exist after 30 days, but at that point, the Kedushin takes effect. Same thing over here. At that point, the pidyon takes effect.
No, but in Kedushin, you don't preclude the acquisition before the 30 days.
Well, Shmuel Omer Loch, so Shmuel will answer, that's not a valid comparison. Hossam, the Yodel Kadosh Me'akshav, because the difference is, in that case, the man could have been Mekadosh right now. He didn't have to say it's only going to be after 30 days. Hochein, the Yodel Kadosh Me'akshav. Here, he's not able to be poured to him now because within the 30 days, and the Torah says only after 30 days, exactly. Okay. Who is the halacha like? Okay, so Rav is still entitled to have his opinion. But wait, the afagav the kaimalon the kolhech the pligi Rav Shmuel. Now we have a general rule that whenever throughout Shas Rav and Shmuel argue hilchasa kerav the isuri of Shmuel b'dini, we have the usual rule that whenever you have an argument between Rav and Shmuel in dini isur v'heter, then the halacha is like Rav, and whenever you have an argument in dini momenus, the halacha is like Shmuel. So therefore you would argue in this case it's a matter of isur v'heter. Is that we would argue, one second. Nevertheless, Hilchas HaKavasei to Shmuel, the halacha is like Shmuel. Although there's a lot of detail to that. First of all, it's not so simple. The Ma'ari Kurkus on Rambam asks, why would we consider this Isser V'Heter anyway? Why would we consider it Dine Momenus? The whole time we've been talking about the idea that Hamotzi Mechaver L'Varaya, it's a financial obligation. So he gives a couple of answers. One of them, one answer being that there can be a distinction between if we have a suffix, whether the kid needs a pidyon aben or not, as in various cases that we had so far, where we're not sure if he's a bechor, versus over here, where we know he's a bechor, and the question is whether the pidyon aben took effect. That could be considered a matter of this or that. That's one of the Ma'ari Kurkus' answers. If you have a suffix, whether you even owe the money to the Kohen at all, namely whether the kid is a Bechor or not, then you would say it's considered Dini Mamas. But in this case, we know the kid is a Bechor. The only question is, you gave this money to the Kohen. Was it valid as Pidyon HaBen or not? So you can make an argument. Therefore, that's a matter of Issur V'Heter. On the basis of that it's not really so much a matter of moment, because it's more a matter of was it a valid pidyon or not. We know he gave him X amount of money, but was it a valid pidyon? So that's one way of explaining why the Gemara considers this over here a matter of Issur V'Heter. With that said, though, there are a lot of Rishonim who actually paskin like Rav in this case. On the grounds, apparently what it is they didn't have in their Gemaras this line that about the halacha being like Shmuel in this case. Or they may have flipped around the opinions, they may have had it the other way around, that Rav says that it's not valid and Shmuel says it is valid. Anyway, so yeah, you have most of the Rishonim passed in like Rav, as well. Let's go through the rest of the sugya. Let's go till the two dots and then we'll talk about it some more. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says, Tanan. Okay, let's look at our Mishnah, see which opinion it fits with. We said Mespesek Lamed Yoim. We said that in the previous Mishnah, we said that if the child dies within the first 30 days, Afal Pishon Nos on the Kohen, even if you already gave the money to the Kohen, nevertheless, Yachdol Chomesh Shloim, the Kohen still have to refund you the money. They still have to refund the money because the kid never reached the age when Pidyon HaBen is necessary. So, Chaim of Demes. Why are we saying the Kohen have to refund the money? Because the kid died. Holoi mess, not within 30 days. Holoi mess, implying if the kid survived past 30 days, no pottery, then it sounds like it would be a valid pidyon aben. Now, according to Rav, that works. According to Shmuel, why should it work? We just said according to Shmuel, it doesn't work. The answer is, we said according to Shmuel. If you gave him the money within 30 days, if the money no longer exists, then it's not a valid pidyon aben. Okay, so the answer is very simple. Okay, you could say the Mishnah is talking about where the money still exists. You're right. If the Kohen had spent the money, then Shmuel would say that either way, whether the kid's alive or dead, not too bad. If the kid is dead, then the kohen for sure has to refund the money. And actually, even if the kid is alive, maybe the kohen doesn't have to refund the money, because fine, he can argue maybe you gave it to me as a present, but nevertheless, you don't have a valid pidyon of that. But if the money still exists, that's when the Mishnah is implying that if the kid is still alive, then you have a valid pidyon aben. As long as you said when you gave the money that I'm giving it to you on condition that it's going to be for the pidyon aben, which is going to take effect when the kid is 30 days old. Fine, then he would be a Baal Choyv. That's a different situation over there. Then you, the claim, yeah, if you have to refund the money, yeah, he'd be a Baal Choyv, but that's not the same thing as we're talking. No, the question is that money is fungible. Fine, but it's the same thing as, in other words, a dollar is a dollar, wherever it is. You gave the claim 5 shloim, and he spent it, so he has to give you back a different 5 shloim. That's true, but here we're talking about, but what we're talking about over here, if the money itself was spent, then Shmuel was saying, okay, so then what you have is that You gave him 5 shloim. Those 5 shloim that you gave him are not in his possession at the time when the 30 days come. Therefore, the pinyon aben can't take effect. It's similar, it's vaguely similar. Talmud Kaddish Milva, yeah. That's when at the time that you're forgiving her a debt, for example, she's not actually getting any actual money from you. Yeah, okay. Somewhat like that, I guess.
Well, she's getting,
no, it's not quite the same thing. The dinim hamakadosh minulva ainim hakodeshus, because she's not actually getting an object of value right now. She's getting that you.
Let's say you cancel the debt and you give her a
pruta. If you give her a pruta, that's makadosh minulva pruta. We actually learned in the Sanhedrin that Shmuel and David argued about that in connection with the kedushin of Michal. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, getting back to our Gemara over here. So therefore, so Shmuel could argue the Mishnah still fits with his opinion, because the Mishnah is talking about where the money is still there. Okay, Toshma, what about, let's look at our Mishnah now. We said that if the father dies within the first 30 days, b'cheska shloi nikta, then the son has a chazaka that he was not redeemed, ad sheyom yoloi, or really it's supposed to be sheyavi raya, unless the son can bring proof, shenikta, that he was actually redeemed. So, according to Shmuel, the father died within the first 30 days, implying, and if the son can bring proof that his father did the pinyon aben, then it's good. According to Shmuel, why should it be good? And again, the answer is, Hosanami de Isnu Lamois Bainai. Same thing, the Mishnah could be talking about where the money is still there in its original form, implying if it wasn't, then maybe it wouldn't be. Then he would actually need to do a pinyon aben. Okay, so that's the argument between Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara continues. Toni Tana Kameja Rav Yehuda. A Tana taught a Braisa in front of Rav Yehuda, who was a Talmud of both Rav and Shmuel, but primarily of Shmuel. And the Braisa... Not Rabbi Yehuda, this is Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda, the Amora. So a Tana taught a Braisa in front of him that says, Apodas b'noi b'sech shloshim yom. If a person redeems his son during the first 30 days, b'noi padri, then the pidyon aben is valid. Omar le, so Rav Yehuda tells him, how can you be saying a braisa like that? Shmuel omar ein b'noi padri v'as amet b'noi padri. Shmuel said that it doesn't work. How can you be bringing a braisa that it is? Okay, but nevertheless, so actually the Rosh points out, well, one second, we said before that some Rishonim also hold like Rav, but wait, one thing that the Rosh points out, fine, the question is primarily according to Shmuel, but the question is even according to Rav. Why would you bring a braisa that says a blanket statement that he's always pottery when even according to Rav, we said on Amud Aleph, there will be a case when not? Namely, if he didn't spend it, not if the money is spent. Rav holds if the money is spent, it doesn't matter. But if he didn't say that it's supposed to take effect, l'achar shloshim. If he just gave and said when the kid is 10 or 20 days old, he gave the money to the kohen and said, here, I'm giving you the money for the pidyon aben. Rav would agree that's no good. But you have to say l'achar shloshim. If you don't say, then we said on Amud Aleph. We said that if he says I want it to take effect as of now, ein b'noi padri, then it's not valid. So okay, when you get down to it, you really have. I mean, you could have where you explicitly said me'achshav. You could have where you explicitly said la'achar shloshim, and then you could have where you didn't specify what would that be. We'll talk about that in a second. But anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda could still be saying not only the braisa contradicts Shmuel, but it doesn't fit so smoothly according to Rav either, because according to Rav, at least it should have said that you have to say Me'achshav. Okay. And the Gemara continues, as we did before. Ba'af agav de kaimalon kerav the isuri of chushmul b'dini. Even though generally we have the rule that in dina isur v'heter the halacha is usually like rav, and in dina momenes the halacha is usually like shmul. Hocha hilch b'tav say to shmul, here the halacha is like shmul. Now why would the gemara be repeating it? So first of all, again, you have rishonim who don't have that at all, and therefore many of them do actually pass them like rav. There is some of the achronim talk about the shach, for example, talks about there may be a difference between whether you explicitly said that I want it to take effect after 30 days, where there we would say fine, even if the money doesn't exist after 30 days, then fine. Rav is comparing it to kedushin, and even though okay, Shmuel is arguing it's not the same thing, nevertheless Rav is still entitled to his opinion, and we can pass him like him. But on the other hand, you could have a different case where you didn't specify at all. You didn't say whether I want it to take effect me'ach or v'lach or shloshim. Then we could say maybe the halacha is like Shmuel. Okay, so then we could say maybe the halacha is like Shmuel, that it doesn't take effect. Bottom line, though, is Mechaber paskins like Rav, the Rambam paskins like Rav as well, and the Mechaber follows suit and paskins like Rav, that it is valid. So even so if he said to him that's going to be l'ach shloshim, even if the money is gone by the end of the 30, it's still valid. The Rambam mentions, given that you have some Rishonim, and we have the Gersa of the Gemara in front of us that seems to accept Shmuel's opinion, then maybe we should be choshish for that and be proud to him again without a bracha. And then that's where the Shach points out that you have, for example, he points out in the opinion of the Smag that maybe you could distinguish between whether he explicitly said after 30 days or whether he didn't specify. Okay. Fine. Then we said in the Mishnah, who listers of no listers? We said if you have a father who needs a pidyon aben, Yitzchak in our scenario, and a son who needs a pidyon aben, Yaakov. So we said, who kodim lov noichulo? So we said the Tanakhama says that the father's pidyon aben comes first, and Rabbi Yehuda said that the son's pidyon aben comes first. So let's talk about that. Tonon abonon. Who lifters of no lifters? If you have same case, you have a person himself and his pidyon aben, and so does his son. Yeah. Who kodim lifnoi? So as the Tanakhama said in our Mishnah, his pidyon aben comes first. Rabbi Yehuda omer bnoi kodmo. Rabbi Yehuda says no. The son's pidyon aben comes first. Shemitzvosei alav is because, as we said in the Mishnah, the mitzvah of the son, the mitzvah of Yaakov, is on his father Yitzchak. So therefore, Yitzchak is responsible to do it now. Or the other way around, Shemitzvosei alav is probably Yitzchak's original, the original responsibility for Yitzchak's pidyon aben was supposed to be on Abraham. So therefore, okay, Abraham's not available, devolved on Yitzchak, but still it's not original to him. Or mitzvah b'nei olav, whereas the mitzvah to redeem Yaakov is directly on Yitzchak. Okay, so let's analyze that. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says the mitzvah that's directly on him comes first before a mitzvah that devolves on him from somebody else. Okay, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, hakol modim. Now it's like this. Everybody would agree, heicha delekta elachamish sloim, if the father, if Yitzchak, only has five sloim to his name, there's no question who kodim livnoi. There's no question then, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that his own pidyon aben comes ahead of the pidyon aben of his son. Because the fact of the matter is, regardless whether you say it's a chiyuv that devolved on him, it's a chiyuv that came from his father, whatever, the bottom line is, he has to have a pidyon aben for himself. So therefore, he's going to have to spend that. Okay, but his father's dead. So therefore,
that's the point.
So therefore, now, no, so therefore, everybody is going to agree to my time of the mitzvah di day odif. Because the mitzvah about him directly is much more important. The mitzvah that applies, not who the chiyuv was on originally, but the fact is, we're talking about a mitzvah for him to redeem himself. A mitzvah for him to do something for himself takes precedence over a mitzvah that he has to do for his son.
Never was obligated to do it for himself.
He was, because if his father died without doing it, he is obligated. That's how it is.
That's the halacha?
Yeah, that is the halacha, yeah. Yeah, well, that's
whenever
true also. Well, okay, fine, whenever he became a god, yeah. So that wouldn't be the argument. Ki pligi, when would the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda be arguing, heicha de'ikah chomesh meshubadus v'chomesh b'nei chorin? If there exists five sloim of property which is meshubad, let's say, for example, he had land that he sold to somebody else, which therefore is under a lien for this, v'chomesh b'nei chorin, and then he has five more, which are b'nei chorin, which he himself still owns. So now you have the machlokes. How do we do things? So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the pidyon aben of the son goes first. How is that? Rabbi Yehuda says a milvah suva b'tora suva b'shtar danya. Rabbi Yehuda will hold that a milvah that's written in the Torah is considered as if it's written in the shtar. In other words, we discussed this point about milvah suva b'tora a few days ago, that we have a couple of different understandings of what exactly it means suva b'tora. Is it that it's an obligation that's on him independent of anything that he specifically did? It's just an automatic obligation on him. Is it something where the Torah mentions a fixed amount that he has to give? Whatever it is, whatever the exact detail it is written in the Torah that he has to pay this 5 shloim. And we discussed the other day the question: Does that make it considered that such a debt is considered as if it's written in a shtar? If we take the view that it is, then a milvah of the shtar you can collect from the shabbatim. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda saw the fact that it's that it's an obligation independent of anything that he specifically did. He didn't go borrow money or whatever, or whether we say that it has to do with the fact that the Torah mentioned a fixed amount that he has to pay. Whatever it is, the point is that it's written in the Torah that he has to pay this amount. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda takes the view that something that's written in the Torah is the equivalent of as if it was written in a shtar. Milvach suva b'tora is as if it's written in the shtar. Therefore, what he does is like this. The Didei, so now as far as the Pidyon HaBen for himself, again, remember, Rabbi Yehuda says that the Pidyon HaBen for him, Rabbi Yehuda had said that the Pidyon HaBen for his son comes first, but what does that mean? It means like this. The Didei also the Torah from the Shabbi, what he can do is for the 5 shloim that he needs for his own Pidyon HaBen, the Kohen is going to go and be able to take from the Chosim HaShabbatim because the Kohen's Shibud came before the father ever sold, before Yitzchak ever sold these nechassim. So the Kohen is going to be able to take from those. But Ovachani Chomesh Bnei Chorin Parik Le'Levrei. Meanwhile, the father is going to use the 5 that are Bnei Chorin that he actually still owns and use them for the Pidyon HaBen for his son. So the point is, Rashi says that the point is, if he were to give the Bnei Chorin for his own Pidyon HaBen, then the Kohen would not necessarily be able to take from the Shabbatim for the Pidyon HaBen of the son, because not necessarily. The father could have sold this property before the son was ever born or before he turned 30 days old. Okay, so Rashi is saying like this. Rabbi Yehuda had said that the Pidyon HaBen of his son takes precedence. Rabbi Yehuda is not necessarily talking about which one is actually accomplished first. What Rabbi Yehuda means, according to Rashi, is that when it comes to the sons, it can only be taken from Bnei Chorin because not necessarily did the shibud on this land begin before the son turned 30 days old. He may have sold the land long before the son turned 30 days old, and then there's no shibud on it anyway. But there is a shibud on it for his own Pidyon HaBen, because he himself, obviously, his chiyuv for Pidyon HaBen began when he was 30 days old, and he sold the property long after that, of course. So therefore, what it means is the Kohen is going to go to the third party and take Nechostim Meshabodim for the Pidyon HaBen of the father. And after that, now you have the 5 Bnei Chorin, therefore the father is going to give those to the Kohen for himself, or for his son, rather. So the Meshabodim are going to be for his own Pidyon HaBen, the Bnei Chorin are going to be for his son's Pidyon HaBen. As opposed, if he were to do the reverse, if he were to give the Bnei Chorin for himself, then the Kohen wouldn't be able to collect from the Meshabodim. But this is all predicated on the idea that the Kohen is even able to collect from the Shabbatim, which is predicated on the idea that we say that a milvah suva b'tora is considered like a milvah b'shtar. So, if we were to say it's a milvah alpeh, you can't collect from the Shabbatim for a milvah alpeh anyway.
But if you say that a milvah that's written in the Torah is like in a shtar,
right?
So then the son Pidyon HaBen is also written in the Torah.
That's true, but the Shibud, but in order... One, one, no, 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 no. No, because keep in mind, a shibud on karka only applies if the property was sold after the debt came into effect. Yes, it's sort of a tarta, but when did it come into effect? Only when the son is 30 days old.
Yeah.
So if the father sold the property a week or a month or a year or whatever before that, then there's no shibud on it. No different than if Reuven sells a field and later on borrows money from Shimon, there's no shibud on that field.
But after that,
fine, no, okay, but the point is, in other words, Rashi, okay, fine, but Rashi is saying, the point Rashi says over here is Shema Shibud Halakuchas Kodim Lulei Desbenei, because possibly the fact that the other guy bought the property comes before the son was born, and therefore there's not necessarily a Shibud on the, property at all.
Okay, but technically, if it came afterwards,
okay, then fine. Then
you money. Can the client go and ask the two shibudim?
Maybe. Yeah, why not?
Maybe, right?
Yeah, the pastor's there.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Rashi in Kedushin, this sugya is also in Kedushin. You have a mission over there that mentions kol mitzvah ben ala ab, all the mitzvahs that a father was obligated to do for his son, and among them are to give him a bris milah and pidyon haben and so forth. So it mentions pidyon haben over there, and so you have a short sugya about pidyon haben paralleling our sugya over here. Rashi makes a point over there that you can't say that it would be considered a null. You can't say that the this to take away nechosim mishabadim from the other parties on behalf of the son's pidyon haben would be like treating them unfairly. Rashi says over there, because the fact of the matter is, as Rabbi Hoda is saying, the mitzvah to be poured to his son is more important than the mitzvah to be poured to himself. So therefore, if the only way we can accomplish that both those
is
because Rabbi Hoda said knew that the mitzvah of being poured to his son is on him, and the mitzvah of being poured to himself was originally on his father. So therefore, Rashi makes the point over there that the reason why the third parties can't say, well, why should we have to get involved? You have five shloim, let the kohen just take those, and then we're out of the picture, is because the fact of the matter is, we can tell them, look, you know, I have a chiyuv for myself to be poged myself, and as Rabbi Huda is telling me that takes precedence over the chiyuv to be poged my son, and therefore that's how it is. Okay, Tosfos actually brings up a point over here. No, if he has the money, obviously there's nothing to talk about. We're talking about, again, if there's only five, we're talking about where there's only five nechosim, there's only five of Meshubadim and five of Bnei Chorin. If he has ten of Bnei Chorin, obviously then you don't. No, of course not. In fact, Tosfos mentioned the point over here. Tosfos brings up a point over here. In general, you have a concept. You can't start going to nechosim Meshubadim unless you first go to nechosim Bnei Chorin. So why over here are we saying, in effect, that he can go to the Nechosim Meshubadim first? So again, Rashi makes the point over there, because the fact of the matter is the mitzvah of his own shibud is much more important. Okay, Tosfos over there and over here, Tosfos over there in Kedushin and over here in Bechoris gives a few different other explanations. One of them, Tosfos says, let's say these buyers bought the property from his father, so therefore they can't go so easily to the nechassim that he bought, because there's a preceding shibud on those. Also, the Tosfos over there gives an answer that also you could have that this property was made into an aposiki. It was designated to begin with, but this is going to be used in collection of a debt, so then you could go after that first. Okay, fine. So anyway, all that is according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, Rabbanan, sadly, where's the Rabbanan? Why are they saying that his pidyon comes first, that the son's pidyon comes first? Because they hold milvak suva turtle lav suva b'shtar danya. A milvah that's written in the Torah is not considered as if it was written in a shtar, and therefore, in other words, there's not going to be any way to collect from Mishabodim. Hilchach mitzvah didei adif, therefore the mitzvah of being poyda himself takes precedence, and therefore you take the Bnei Chorin and you use it for that. Given that, in other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is going to be a way to get them both accomplished. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, in order for the mechanism of it to work, that requires us to say that his own pidyon comes first in order for the shibud to be able to take effect. The Rabbanon, who don't hold that there can be a shibud here anyway, because they hold the whole thing is considered a milval peh. There's no shtar over here, so therefore they're going to say, okay, look, the kohen then in that case, given that he only has five bnei chorin, the kohen's only going to be able to collect for one of them anyway, so it might as well be for the son.
The bnei chorin is
not for the son, for himself rather, for himself to be poured to the father, right?
Okay. the
Bnei Chorin means property that he himself still owns. That he never sold it.
Bnei
Chorin, because there's no shibud on it. It's free and clear. In other words, he owns it free and clear, as opposed to the Shabbatim, where somebody else bought it, and there's a shibud, there's a lien on it, and he has some comfort in. Okay. Fine. Mishnah says, Chomish Sloyim Shalben, now let's talk about the actual monetary value. How much are you giving to the client? The five Sloyim that you have to give is Pidyon HaBen for a son. The mona tsuri, they are measured using the mona of tsur, as we'll explain. We'll talk about in the Gemara what that means. Tsur is a city in the north of Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, it's in Lebanon. Tyre, it's called in English. They used to mint over there very high. In those days, it was considered part of Eretz Yisrael. It is halacha considered part of Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Nowadays, it's in Lebanon, but yeah. Anyway, it was a big, rich trading center. Yeah, a number of places in Tanakh where it talks about how it was the Wall Street of those days. Basically, everything was bought and traded and sold over there. Anyway, the point is that they also minted very high quality silver coins, and so the five we mentioned that all over the place in chat. Yeah. So the five sloyim are measured using monet 30. A monet itself is actually 100, is actually 100 dinarim, but the Mephoshim say over here, what we mean is, we don't mean you pay an actual monet, it means we use the value of the monet 30, and we use the value of the monet 30, and then we divide it down appropriately to get the five sloyim. A monet is 25 sloyim, yeah. So you take a monet 30 and divide it into five, and there is your five sloyim. More of those, Shloshim Shel Eved. Also, the Torah tells us that if an ox gores and kills a person's Eved Knani or Shifa Knanis, then the owner of the ox has to pay a fixed knas of 30 shekel. So that, Chamishim Shel Ones, also the 50 shkolim, 50 sloyim, that an onus has to pay to that a man rapes a girl, a naira, then he has to pay 50 sloyim for onus, plus he also has to pay boshas and tsar and whatever, yeah. So that, v'sham mafateh, and also the 50 sloyim that are paid by a mafateh, where he seduces the girl, umeya shel motzi shemra, and you also have the case in Parashat Kisese, where a man slanders his wife and based it and claims that she was Mizana during the Erisin, which if true would mean she's Chayav Nisa, and if false, then he gets Malchus and also pays a fine. He pays 100 Sloyim. Kulam, B'Shekel HaKodesh, B'Mona Tzori, all of them are measured using the Shekel HaKodesh, which is also measured according to the Mona Tzori. Why the mission doesn't put together the Pidyon HaBen with all these other ones, a couple of different explanations. One interesting one, the Melechus Shloima says, on Mishnayot, says the Mishnah didn't want to, the Tana didn't want to put together Pidyon HaBen, which is a mitzvah, with all these other ones that come about through an Aviv. Anyway, but all of them are measured using the same standard. All of them you go according to the Monet Sodi. So again, a Monet Sodi consists of Monet is 100 dinarim. So therefore, what we mean is that there's a four dinar to a shekel. So what we mean is you divide or multiply appropriately to get the appropriate figures. If, let's say, for example, we're talking about, let's say, the 30 shkolim for an Eved, the 30 shekel is 120 dinar, so it would be 120 dinar measured according to the monet 30.
30 shekel
is 120 dinar, 30 times 4. So therefore, so again, you'd be paying a monet 30 plus a bit extra. A monet is 100 dinar. A monet is 100 dinar, 25 shkolim. Yeah, which is equal to 25 shkolim. So, the Gemara starts out.
So, by order of value, it's the mana, the shekel.
And the dinar.
And the dinar.
Right. Okay. So now we're going to be talking about a few different currencies that they had in those days. So, monet sodi, what does the Mishnah mean with the expression monet sodi? Amar Abasi, mona shel sodi. It means just that. It means the mona that is minted and circulates in, that circulates in sur. Which is, again, it's equivalent to 25 sloyim, where each seller consists of four dinarim. Another name for a dinar is a zuz. Rashi, by the way, mentions, puts it in terms of weights from his times. Rashi uses the expression over here that the dinar weighs the zuz, whatever, is a weight of gold equal to 2.5 shittin of the measurements of the weights that they use for iron. So in Rashi's times they had different kinds of, just like nowadays you have in the American system, you have a regular pound and then you have a troy pound. So in Rashi's times also you had different A Troy pound is heavier. No, it's just one. Troy pound is used for precious metals, gold and silver, and the regular pound, the avoirdupois pound, is used for everything else. Anyway, the point is, in Rashi's times, there was something similar. So you had a certain type of weights that were used for measuring iron, and the one unit in that was called a pshit. So Rashi says then that you have, so 2.5 pshitim of that equals the weight of gold equal to that would be the equivalent of a zuz. Rashi also, there's a Rashi in Parshas Mishpatim, Tosfos quotes it over here, that also puts it in terms of weights that existed in Rashi's times. Rashi relates it to a certain weight that was used in cologne in his time. Okay. Anyway, so Rav Asi is saying that the monotony of our Mishnah means Rav Asi is saying that the monotony of our Mishnah means the mona that circulates in Sur, which is of a certain value. Tosfos discusses over here with this and with the next couple of opinions over here. It comes out from the way Rashi explains it that the various opinions over here are actually arguing about the different opinions that we're going to have in over here in the Gemara are actually arguing about what the actual value of five sloy means, such that including one of the opinions we have over here where we're going to have soon, it says that it's actually worth very little. Tosfos says that not. Tosfos says that what all it is all the different opinions that we're going to quote over here in the Gemara are all just trying to equate. They all know what five sloim is. All of them agree that it's a certain amount. They're each one equating it to coins that existed and that circulated in their times. Okay. So anyway, sort of Asi said, so according to Rashi, it comes out that there were several different definitions, which the Amoraim are arguing about over here. Some make it more, some make it less. According to Tosfos, they all agree on the actual size. They're just equating it with different coins that existed and that circulated in their time. Okay. So anyway, so Rav Asi said monashal tzori. Rav Ami omad dinra arva. Rav Ami says that the sela tzori of our Mishnah is not like Rav Asi said the mona that circulates in Sur. Rather, the sela tzori is a dinner of Arabia. So how big is it?
A dinner of Arabia.
Dinner arva. A dinner that was coined and circulated in different times. They were different sizes. Rashi brings from a tshuva of the Gaonim that throughout Shas we talk about regular dinarim, of which four make a seller. Seven of those dinarim equal 10 dinarim of Arabia. Rashi brings from the tshuva. No, apparently not. I mean, the Amoraim are living a few hundred years after the Korban, so you didn't have at that time circulating around coins from the business fish anymore. So yeah, they had to equate it with various version coins. Okay. So Rav Ami says dinra arva, which again according to Rashi means that Rav Ami is saying that the five sloyim are a lot less than Rav Asi made. Rav Asi was equating it to the coins of Tsur, and Rav Ami is saying actually we can equate it to the Arab coins which are lighter. Again, Tosfos disagrees with that, and Tosfos says that, among other things, first of all, when we say over here a dinner, Rashi is saying over here that we're talking about a silver dinner, that the dinner arva we're talking about over here means 10 smaller dinners. 10 smaller dinarim equals 7 regular dinarim. So it comes out, in other words, and so 5 sloim is 20 dinarim, so it would come out, you only need, according to that way of looking at it, you would only need about 30 of these Arabian dinarim for opinion of them.
5 sloim is
20 dinarim. It's 5, 20 dinarim. If Rashi is saying that 7 regular... A mana is 100 dinarim. Yeah. If Rashi is saying over here from the Gaonim that 7 regular dinarim equal 10 of these Arabian dinarim, then it comes out, if you need 30 regular dinarim approximately for Pinyin Aben, sorry, 20 regular dinarim for Pinyin Aben. So it means, in other words, that so 20 is about 7 times 3. So it would come out, you need about 30 of these Arabian dinarim, according to Rashi. Tosfos disagrees, and Tosfos learns over here that dinra arva over here does not mean a silver dinner from Arabia. It means a gold dinner. In general, the word dinner on so in that case, so that's what Tosfos is saying. In other words, that we're not talking about over here. We're not talking about over here much less, as they're actually saying. We're just talking about it is that we're just talking about that's fine. If a regular gold dinner would equal 25 silver dinars. Over here, and therefore, if you use a gold dinar, you would have a little bit extra because you only need 20. With 25 silver dinarim, which is more than 5 sloim, because again, 5 sloim, 20 regular dinarim. Tosfos learns that the dinar arva we're talking about over here is a gold dinar from Arabia, which is a little bit smaller than a regular gold dinar. It equals exactly 20 regular dinarim, and therefore you use one of those exactly for pidyon aveh. So in other words, it comes out a factor of several times larger than Rashi's understanding. Rav Chanina Omer, Istira Sarsir, Rav Chanina gives a third definition, an Istira, which is a type of coin, Sarsir, Rashi understands Sarsir, or Srita, actually is how Rashi puts it, that which is very worn out, Dimizdabna Tzmanya B'dinra, of which 8 of them make a regular dinner. Of those, Chomesh Minay or Pidyon HaBen, of those, you need only 5 of those for Pidyon HaBen. 8 of them would equal one dinner. Rav Chanina is saying all you need is 5, you need five eighths of a dinner. Again, according to Rashi, it means that Rav Chanina is saying that the 5 sloim are only worth a very small amount. According to Tosfos, first of all, according to Tosfos, Sarsia means from Syria. And second of all, again, Rashi learns that the dinner over here means a gold dinner, which is worth 25 silver dinner. So again, the idea would be we're talking about this istira. 8 of them make a gold dinner, make a regular size gold dinner. So 5 of those, 5/8 of that would be what you need for pidyon aveh.
Which would be,
according to Tosfos, we're still talking 5 sloim. Everybody is agreeing to the actual amount. They're just defining it in terms of different coins. Just like nowadays, if you talk about the amount of silver you need for pidyon aveh, you could define it in terms of a certain number of silver dollars. You could define it in terms of a certain number of pounds sterling. You could define it in terms of a certain number of ounces or grams or what have you. So according to Tosfos, they're all agreeing on the actual amount. They're just using different units of measurement to describe it. According to Rashi, they're actually arguing on the amount. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan says, here's another definition. Dinra hadraina trina shaifa. You take a dinner hadraina charaina shaifa. I'll explain in a second what those terms mean. Dimizabna be'esr b'chamisha zuzi. Where here, according to everybody, we're talking about a gold dinner, where it's worth 25 silver zuzim, which fine, is the usual amount for a gold dinner, because it's usually 25 to 1. Dalminai shtusa. Okay, so actually, before we go with the calculation, let's define what is dinner hadraina trina shaita. Rashi explains hadraina means that it has that it was minted during the reign of Adrianus, Hadrian. Trina means that it was minted during the reign of Trajan. So these are emperors who ruled a few decades after the Churban by Sheni. Shaifa, Rashi says the expression Shem HaMelech, it means the name of the king, but a number of Achronim say Rashi doesn't mean that there's a king named Shaifa. Rashi means the word Shaifa means rubbed out, meaning that the name of the king has been erased, has been rubbed out, and you can't tell. You can't tell. You can tell from the picture, but you can't see the writing on it anymore. So according to Rashi, the term Sosirisa means miushonim, means old. Now we're saying, men, old, actually, I should have said, not so much rubbed out, but old. Yeah, Rashi said over here. And by the way, I mean, Shittimukhavetis anyway changes the gears over there and says it's not old, but rather small. Okay, anyway, here we're saying Shaifa, according to Rashi, means rubbed out. It means rubbed out. There's actually an interesting thing from one of the Gaonim, Rav Nachshon Gaon, who gives an explanation, which Tosfos gives a somewhat similar explanation, that Hadraina and Trina rather describe the qualities of the coin. Hadraina means that it's round. Trina means that it's big. And Shaifa. So Rav Nachshon Gaon understands actually Shaifa to mean that it doesn't have an image on it, all it has is writing. And he identifies it with the Gemara in Bava Kamma that mentions that there were coins that were minted by David and Shlomo in Yerushalayim, where they didn't put human images on them, of course, because you're not allowed to. Even, by the way, the Jewish kings in the times of the Second Mishnah didn't put human images on their coins for the same reason. So instead, they had, the Gemara tells us over there, it had the names of David and Shlomo on one side and the word Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh on the other side. I never found them. Doesn't mean anything. But Rav Nachshon Gaon understands that that's what those are the ones that we're talking about over here. Not from Hadrian and from Trajan, but rather from David and Shlomo in the time of the first Mishnah. And Shayofa, he says, means that they didn't have an image on them, just writing. Tosfos over here, Tosfos over here, and also in other places, explains a little bit differently that, yeah, Shayofa still means that they were rubbed out. That's a different one. That's the coins of Abraham and Yitzchak. It says the coin that Abraham struck. It says had an old man, an old woman on one side, and a young man and a young woman on the other side. Either again, not images of them, but the words either representing Abraham and Sarah and Yitzchak and Rivka, or representing Abraham and Sarah themselves being first old and then they became youthful again and had a child. No images, right? Anyway, well, no, I mean, so they could have images of non-human things on the coins of the kings of the Hashmonoi kings from the second Mikdash, for example. They have all kinds of they have cornucopias, they have wheels, they have images of Caleb from the Bessa Mikdash and other such things, but never human faces. Yeah,
neither animal
faces. I don't think they generally have animals either. Although I suppose Allah, they probably could, but yeah, okay. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan is saying that the Dinra Hadrina Trina Shaifa, of which 25 Zuzim make one of those, so Rabbi Yochanan says, Dal Minayu Shlusa, deduct 1/6 from that, Vahanach, from that 25 Zuzim, Vahanach, for Pidyon HaBen, and the remainder is what you need for Pidyon HaBen. In other words, it sounds like Rabbi Yochanan is saying that you need 5/6 of 25 dinars. Now, the problem with that is, as the Gemara says, if you divide 5 by 6, you have 5/6, multiply that by 25, you get somewhat more than 20. We said you only need 20. 5/6 times 25, you get 20.8, you get 20 and 5/6.
Yeah.
So that's what Gemara is going to ask. So why are you only deducting 1/6? Hani Estrin v'chad nachi dan ka'abi. What you're left with, if you do that calculation, you end up with 21 minus 1/6. And all you need is 20 dinarim for Pidyon HaBen. So why is Rabbi Yochanan saying that you should have to do that? No, Ella. So we have to change the wording a little bit. Dal shtusa v'zuza. Rather, what you do is you deduct from this dinar hadrina, etc. You deduct from it 1/6 plus 1 zuz. V'hanach for Pidyon HaBen, and then you have the amount that you need for Pidyon HaBen.
1/6.
You subtract 1/6 plus of the 25. So you divide 25 by 5/6. You multiply 25 by that gives you the 20 and 5/6. Then you subtract 1 zuz, and that's the amount you need. The problem with that is akati esrin nachi dakahavi. Then you have 19 and 5/6, and you need 20. So what is Rabbi Yochanan saying? El or no? We have to change the wording again. Dal zuza ushtusa. First deduct the 1 zuz, then take 5/6 of what you have left. In other words, you start off with 25, deduct 1 zuz, that gives you 24, multiply that by 5/6, and you have 20. So that's the amount you need for Pidyon HaBen. The reason why, Tosfos says, the reason why he would be phrasing it in such an odd way is because, as the Gemara is going to point out soon in a different context, sometimes you have, when you're changing money from between large and small denominations, and you need to pay a money changer, second of all, when you're weighing out the coins, it's hard to weigh them exactly right. You usually have a little bit of overbalance on one side or the other. So that's why Rabbi Yochanan is saying that first deduct the 1 zuz, which will be for the hechra, for this off balancing a little bit, and then deduct, and then take 5/6 of the remainder. So therefore, so now it works out. Dahavalu estrin maskele, maskele dinner. So now it comes out 20 maskele, 20 weights in weights of a dinner. The inun estrin utmanya zuzi upalgi upalgi danta. Which another way of expressing that in terms of the Arabian dinarim that we mentioned before is 28 zuzim plus a half a zuz and plus a 12th of a zuz. So Rashi gives a long calculation over here based on what we said before, that Rashi had said these Arabian dinarim are smaller than regular dinarim, such that 7 regular dinarim equal 10 of these Arabian dinarim. So it comes out. So Rashi makes the calculation as follows: If you need 20 dinarim, and each of these Arabian dinarim is worth here. Let's see. So you need
20 Arabian.
Here you have like this: 7 regular dinarim. 7 regular dinarim equal 1 3/4 sella.
1.75
sella is 7 dinarim. So translate. So that means then, if those equal ten Arabian dinarim, then
which
it means the seven regular dinarim equal 10 Arabian dinarim. So it comes out that each Arabian dinar is 0.175 of a seller. Since you need five sloim, then you divide five by 0.175, and you come out with 28 4/7. So the Gemara is rounding it to the nearest to the nearest fractions that they actually use as currency. So it comes out 28.5 plus 1/12. 1/12 being one twelfth is a little bit less than that, but it's close enough. Rashi says. So that's another way to calculate it. Tosfos says that this thing that we're mentioning over here, putting it in terms of maskali and in terms of these Arabian dinarim, Tosfos says this part was actually added by the Gaon. That they wrote it, in other words, on the side of their Gemara, and it was accidentally put into the Gemara. That again, they're trying to equate it to the coins. By the time of the Gaonim, you had the Arabs ruled over Babel and Persia and whatever. So therefore, they have to translate it in terms of the currency that was being used in those times. And so you're talking the Gaonim lived between the 6th and the 10th and the 11th centuries. So you're talking sometime during that period. Okay, fine. So that's the calculation, then that's how much you need. In modern terms, most of the poskim hold that the amount for that the five sloyim comes out to somewhere around 100 grams, give or take a little bit. The Alter Rebbe, for example, writes in the Siddur, the Alter Rebbe equates it to a measurement that they used in Russia and in Poland in his time called a lot, a lamed vav tes, where he says that the five sloyim equal eight of those, which in modern measurements comes out to about 102 grams. So 102 grams of silver. So if you use old American silver dollars, for example, in principle you could use four of them and you have more than enough because each one contains somewhere around somewhere around 27 or 28 grams of silver, I think. In practice, people I think usually use five silver dollars. But
each American Eagle.
Not American Eagle. I'm talking about the old pre-1965 silver dollars. Were 90 they were 90% silver and they were 90% silver and they weighed somewhere around 30 or 31 grams, so it means they contain like 27 or 28 grams of silver each. So therefore four of them will comfortably get you over the limit, but in practice people usually use five. There's some posts can nowadays hold of different amounts. I think there are some of them that hold as high as like 117 or 120 grams, whatever. Great good deal of discussion about that. All right.
How much is a gram of silver?
How much is it sell for? I have no idea. I don't know. An ounce of silver nowadays is about 40 or 50 bucks, if not more. I don't know. Yeah, okay. All right, let's go on. Okay. Amar Rava. Okay. New discussion about this amount for the pinyan of him. Amar Rava. Silim d'oraisa tlos of a tilta habi. Up until now, we've been taking it for granted that a seller is four dinars. Now, Rava is saying not necessarily. A seller of the Torah, Rava says, is actually only 3 1/3 dinarim. How do we know that? Because Esrim Gera Hashoko, because we say in the Torah that a shekel consists of 20 Gera. What is a Gera? Umtagamin and Esrim Moin. Targum Unkel is translated as 20 Moin. So therefore, so we just have to figure out how much it is in terms of ma. V'tanya, we learn in a b'raisa. Sheish ma kesef dinar. 6 ma of silver equals a dinar. So therefore, if you only need 20 ma to make up a seller, then it means you need 3 dinarim plus a third. So therefore, so it's not 4 dinarim, but rather 3 1/3. The Gemara says Mesi. I have a contradiction to that, though. A Braisa says, you have a Braisa, which we're going to learn in full in Erchin, Beis Hashem, which Rashi brings it briefly in Parashat Bechukosai. Yeah, but the Torah says that if a person is makdish, a field that he inherited from his ancestors, then we to hekdish, then we evaluate it at the rate of 50 sela per base kur. Per base kur. We take a base kur. We take the area where you would normally plant one kur of barley in measurements of 75,000 square amos. It comes out, if you put it in terms of feet, according to the Avraham Chaim Noah, it comes out to roughly 400 by 400 feet about. So that is valued at 50 sela. And that's if you mastish it right after the oval. If you mastish it sometime between one oval and the next, then we prorate it. We divide down that 50 shekel by the 49 years between one oval and the next, and then we figure out accordingly how much he has to pay or how much somebody else has to pay if they want to buy it from Hekdesh. So for example, let's say he would mastish it, let's say 10 years before the next oval, then the amount is 10 sela and 10 pundion. And 10 punyon is considered the value of the field. Okay, well, Stella went a lot further than it does now. Okay, so the Braisa mentions, that the question is, if you calculate it like that, now a Stella consists of 48 punyon. So therefore, let's consider, So 1 year is one Stella and one punyon. 2 years is two and two, etc. 47 years would be 47 shekel and 47 punyon, 47 sela, whatever, and 47 punyon. 48 would be 48 and 48, which is actually then 49 sloy in total. And then if you have one more year, then you have 49 sloy, you have 49 and 49, which equals 50 plus one extra punyon. But the Pasuk mentions that it's only 50. So where does the extra punyon go? So then 49 sela and 49 punyon. 48 punyon make a sela. So 48 of those become another sela, so you have a 50th one, and you have one punyon left. So why is the Torah telling us that it's exactly 50 sela it should have to be 50 sela and one punyon? So the Braita says punyon zeh matuvoi. So what's going on with that one punyon, which is missing? Kilboin leproitroit. That punyon is an extra fee that you pay for changing money. Meaning, in other words, basically, that, as we were just mentioning before, when you're changing money from large to small denominations or whatever, yeah, there's a cost. First of all, there's a cost because you got to pay the money changer. Second of all, it's hard to weigh it out exactly that it'll be exactly even, because when you have a balance scale, you have to look and see whether it's balanced. So therefore, that extra punyon is if you're doing year by year, then you have the extra punyon in there. If you're doing it right after Yovel, then yeah, you gain one punyon, basically. Anyway, the point is that a stela consists of 48 punyon, and now there are eight punyon to the ma. So therefore, so what are you telling me then? So what are you telling me, Rava, that a stela consists of only three and a third ma? Then it would consist of less than 48 punyon, because three and a third times eight would be what? Three and a third times eight would be 26 and change. Yeah. I got it a little off. Let's try that again. Rava is saying that a stela consists of three and one third dinar. Sorry, not ma. Three and one third dinar, total of 20 ma, as the Pasuk says. But the question is, again, that... He said that a stela d'oraisa is three and one third. The denominations go like this. You have a stela. Each stela consists of four dinim. Each dinar consists of six ma, so you have 24 ma for the stela, on the face of it. And each ma consists of two punyon. Sorry, not eight. Each ma consists of two punyon. So therefore, there's your 48. So that's the question. The Braita is telling us that you have 48 punyon to the stela. According to Robert's calculation, it comes out that you only have 40. Because you have 20 ma, which is 40 punyon. The answer is, basa da isifu ilavayu. The answer is, no. Robert is talking about... 48. Yeah, so the answer is, after they added to the value of the stela, as we learned about this in Menachos, then that changed. Then you get 48 punyon. You're right. The original amount was, in fact, 40 punyon to the seller.
They didn't adjust the mile?
Apparently not. You actually have. We learned in Menachos about that. We had several different explanations over there of exactly how the adjustment was done, whether it was one stage or two, and what exactly they did. Did they adjust the kicker? Did they adjust the seller? Whatever. But after the adjustment, then you have 48 punyon to the seller. The Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. When the Pasuk says Estrin Gera Shekel, the Pasuk says 20 Gera to the Shekel, Lamanu the Shekel, Shu Estrin Gera. Okay, so that tells us Shekel consists of 20 Gera. Uminayin Shim Rotza Lahosif Yosef. But how do we know that if Beis Din wants to add, when one wants to add to the size of the seller, then they can do that? Tamad Lomo Yiyah. Therefore, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk uses the expression Yiyah, that meaning, in other words, Yiyah means there can be another Havaya, there can be another being. Yochol Yifchos, you would think that then maybe they could adjust it downward and make that a Sela is worth less than it would before. Tamad Lomo, who? No, but the Pasuk also mentions who, meaning it has to be that way and no other way. So it can't be less than 20 Gera, but it could be more. You actually have, by the way, when we say over here that they can add to it, so you have some of the Rishonim learn that it means that Beis Din can decide that it should be added to. You have other Rishonim who learn that actually we're not talking about Beis Din to change the right to change the unit. You have other Rishonim who learn that actually what it means is we're not talking about the Beis Din doing it. We're talking about it's the local government, it's the local Jewish or Goyish or doesn't matter government decides that their unit of currency should be larger than a Sela of the Torah. Fine, the Rambam, for example, learns this way then it means that takes effect for halacha, and therefore everything else is adjusted accordingly. Actually, you have some Rishonim who say that in our Mishnah, we mentioned Pidyon HaBen and the other one separately, and I mentioned a reason from Malachas Shlomo because they didn't want to put a mitzvah with things to get rid of other things. Another explanation, though, is that all the other ones will float according to the value of the Sela, whereas the Pidyon HaBen will remain fixed. But anyway, the point is, one way of explaining it is that, yes, if the local government decides that the unit of currency should be larger than a Sela, okay, then that takes effect. And then, therefore, now all the various chiyuvim in the Torah go up in proportion. For example, Matzah Shekel will go up, et cetera. But on the other hand, if their unit of currency is less than a Sela, then we still have to stick with a Sela as our unit.
It can
go higher, but not lower. So again, putting it, let's say, for example, putting it in terms of what we were saying before, if let's say we take, for example, okay, again, the Alter Rebbe had said that 5 sloim for Pidyon HaBen is 102 grams of silver. So meaning, in other words, 1 Sela, according to the Alter Rebbe, is about 20 grams. So if a government decides, for example, that their unit of currency should be an amount of silver worth 30 grams, let's say, then fine, it means Master Shekel from now on is going to be 15 grams, where before it would have been about 10. But on the other hand, if they decide that their unit of currency is going to be something with, let's say, only 15 grams of silver, then if you don't say Master Shekel is only 7.5, no, you still have to give 10 grams for Master Shekel, and similarly for the other things. So therefore, so again, before they increased the size of the Sela, there would have been 20 gera, which is ma, to the shekel, which means 40 punyan. After they increased the size of the Sela, then it goes to 48.
That means
the Sela is worth more. The Sela is worth more, and then therefore we have more punyan going to it. So in this connection, Rav Ashi Shodrele Shibso Zuzi Rav Acha Bred Ravina B'Pidyon HaBen, Rav Ashi sent for Pidyon HaBen, he sent 17 Zuzim to Rav Acha Bred Ravina, which is supposed to be Bred Rava. Rav Acha Bred Rava was a Kohen. So Rav Ashi sent him 17 Zuzim for Pidyon HaBen. Shalach Le, and along with it, he sent him a message, Lishda Limar Tzloch Tilta Yisersa De'ike Lavayu. Please return to me the one-third of a Zuz that I overpaid, meaning Rav Ashi held like Rava that five, that one Sela is 3 1/3 dinim, so therefore 5 of them are going to be 16 2/3. So he's saying therefore, so I paid you 17, so therefore you so therefore please refund me one third, please give me change 1/3 of a dinim. One second, Shalach Le. However, Rav Acha Bred Rava answered back. He sent back a message. On the contrary, Lishda Leimau Tzlos Achrina. On the contrary, you Rav Ashi have to send me 3 more Zuzim. Don't speak of Levi, because we just said before they added to the size of a Sela. Now a Sela is 4 dinim, not 3 1/3 like it was when the Torah was given. Therefore, 5 Sloim come out to 20 Zuz. So you only paid me. So you only gave me 17. So you're 3 short.
So basically,
the sloim increased in size, yeah.
So how much would it be today?
So again, that's what I've been saying, 102 grams of silver. Apparently, there's for a boss of OC for a liar, that the Alter Rebbe, I guess, would hold that before they made this increase, it would have been less. It would have been around 85 grams or so, yeah. So that's it. So I guess he sent him the extra 3. There is, by the way, a little bit of interesting discussion about this among Achronim. When we're saying over here that he sent it to him, it sounds like he sent it with a shliach. But it's interesting because the Rambam writes in Shulchan Aruch that you cannot do Pidyon HaBen with a shliach. So how does that fit with our Gemara? spend with Ashliach. So how does that fit with our Gemara over here? So there's a variety of different answers. One interesting one, one of them is, Chassam Sofer says, when we say that you can't do it with a Shliach, we mean, for example, that you can't have the other guy is going to lay out the money and then you're going to reimburse him later. That wouldn't work. If you give him the money and he's just, the Chassam Sofer uses the expression, he's just being like a trained monkey and giving it to the Kohen, fine, then there's no problem with that, which is what the Gemara would mean over here. No, but in other words, the point is he's sending it with a Shliach, so that's fine. He gave the money to the Shliach. So you can use a Shliach as long as you're the one actually paying the money. A variation of that, some other acronym say maybe he was mezakeh him the money, he was makneh the money via a third party to Rav Acha ben Dinava, and then he sent it with somebody.
Okay. Why did he have to go to Rav Acha?
Rav Acha ben Dinava was a Kohen, apparently. Rav Acha had a
Kohen. I
don't know. I guess because Rav Acha ben Dinava was a distinguished Talmid Chacham, and then other things being equal, you should do that. Yeah. Okay. Fine.